When this happened, you talk about it on The Fan.
It'll be a 1-1 to Judge. The pitch swung on and hit. Deep center field. Trout on the run. Aaron Judge, number 50.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Hey, 405! McMonagle here with you on The Fan. I got you for one more hour. Taking you all the way to the warm-up show at 5-888-808-1019. We opened up with the Mets and Yankees, obviously, as the Mets had a disastrous weekend in Seattle where they couldn't score any runs. They get outscored 22-1 over the weekend. 0-16 with runners in scoring position. And this Met team just, you know, they're not good enough to do anything else but pound you. That's what this team does. That's how. And listen, heading into the season, that's what was expected. What was their best unit? Right? They have Lindor, Pete Alonso. They added J.D. Martinez. Like, they were supposed to score runs. That's how. If this team was going to compete, if they were going to have the year of competing while building, that's what they were going to rely on. And at the beginning of the year, it was a disaster, and the rotation was far better than you thought. Severino having a good year, Manaea pitching well. You know, the rotation was better than you thought. The bullpen, certainly with, like, you know, the likes of Reed Garrett and, you know, up and down a little bit from Diaz on some level. But ultimately, the bullpen was better than you thought. The rotation was better than you thought. And the offense was floundering and killing them. And that wasn't good enough. Right? And they were off to this miserable start, 11 games under 500. And then something changed after the meeting. If you want to give that credit, if you want to give, you know, Lopez throwing his glove into the stands credit. The walk-off home run, I like to begin it there. With J.D. Martinez, the walk-off home run against Miami, whatever the case may be, what happened was this offense exploded. And I know Seattle can pitch, but they've been doing this against good starting pitching the entire year. Whether it's Dylan Cease, when they beat up on San Diego, or Gray in Texas, or Luis Gil and Garrett Cole, or Imanaga in Chicago. Like, they've been doing it against good starting pitching all year. Or at least through this run, excuse me, where they got back in the mix. And they are still in the mix, despite losing three, despite having a disappointing road trip here and losing two out of three to the Angels and getting swept by the Seattle Mariners. Despite this disappointing start to their month, this disappointing road trip, they are right there, a half a game behind the lousy loss, losing seven out of their last eight, including blowing a six-run lead in the eighth inning against the Rockies, Atlanta Braves. So they are right there, but the fact of the matter is, much like the beginning of the year, and much like this weekend, as they proved to you, they can't win if their offense isn't what it's been. And right now, other than Lindor, who still got five hits in this series, Alonso, after hitting two home runs against Colorado, does nothing in this series, and you're still waiting for him to do anything. And for me, he's the guy that needs to be called out, and something needs to change, and he needs to realize that he can still, you know, he's all focused on his value and focused on how many home runs he can hit and how many All-Star game appearances and how he's going to get paid and what his contract's going to look like. Yeah, the great season's gone, but an impactful one and helping this team get to the playoffs is still there in front of him, and he's got to do it. Because right now, Nimmo has been awful for close to a month. J.D. Martinez has been ice cold for how long now? Vientos, who got scratched from the lineup with an ankle injury to start the game, he hasn't been as hot as he was. Jeff McNeil is the one who's kind of turned it around here. But other than him, like, this offense, the guys who've been having these unbelievable seasons, these journeymen like Iglesias, who for some reason having the year of their career, that have been sort of the magic, whether it's Grimace, OMG, or these guys like Bader hitting 270 and coming through with every clutch hit, wasn't going to last forever. But the main point is, whether it's the bullpen and the issues they have there, is they're still waiting for some guys to return. Reed Garrett has returned, and you're waiting for, you know, Reed Foley and some others. But the bullpen's not good enough. The rotation's not good enough. They're not going to be able to win these close contested games. And you saw most of them were. These games were closely contested, right? Quintana pitched fairly well, and the game was close until it got out of hand. Same thing with Manaea, gave up three runs in the first, managed to get through three without giving up much more, and then the bullpen came in and did their job for a lot of the game. And then this game with Severino on Sunday was very close. Sevy, obviously, there's another issue with the amount of innings. He's already up over anything he's done since 2018, and you're worried about him, and now this is three consecutive disappointing starts as he's given up long home runs to Kyle Raleigh. He's given up home runs to Polanco. And this game is real close until, obviously, an error by Lindor, which is hard for it, you know, hard to get on. It's actually a base hit, but a misplay where he had an opportunity to come in on a ball and get an out from Randy Arozarena and put an end to the bleeding. Instead, it leads to a run scored and then the home run from Raleigh. But despite eight strikeouts from Severino's, location's not that good. He's getting pounded with long home runs. And, you know, right now this offense is just, since the All-Star break, been as bad as anyone runners in scoring position, so they're not opportunistic. You don't have your best players really coming through. You don't have the Nimmos of the world carrying the team as they did. You're still waiting for Pete Alonso. And ultimately, as disappointing as all that was, they're coming home to play two of the worst teams in baseball in Oakland and Miami, and they are a half a game out of a wild card spot. But it's clear as day. It was clear the first 2 months of the year, and it's clear this weekend. The part of this team that is going to drag them to the postseason if they get there, the part of this team they need to be dominant, the part of this team that is, for better or for worse, what they'll be, is this offense. And when it's cooking, they've got as many guys over 700, they've got as many above average bats 1 through 9 as anybody in baseball. And that's what's going to carry them. And I understand they played a good pitching team. They scored one run in three games. 27 innings, one run, one measly Jeff McNeil solo shot. It's not going to cut it. And 0 for 16 with runners scoring position, certainly not going to cut it. The Yankees managed to take 2 out of 3 from Texas. Hold on for dear life. The bullpen is a major issue over the last couple of days. They get absolutely torched. Weaver comes in for Cole in the second game of the doubleheader and blows the game. An 8-3 lead after so many good things have happened. And that's really where the Yankees are for me. What bothers me about the New York Yankees is while they were struggling, you were able to point to certain things. And you could say, well, Stanton's coming back from injury. And, you know, even Dominguez is coming back. And that's a conversation for another day. We'll get to Dominguez and what Brian Cashman said about him. We have all week to do that. And we're probably not going to see him till September. But Stan's coming back, and some of the bullpen guys are coming back, and, you know, I expect, different guys to step up, and you could point to all these things, Efros coming back, and all this stuff, and you look at it, and you go, well, Wells and Stanton have answered the biggest glaring hole on the team during their struggles, which was the cleanup spot. Wells has been unbelievable. 4 RBIs in the first game of the doubleheader, giving you good at-bat after good at-bat. Stanton hits a double and a home run in the second game of the doubleheader, follows it up yesterday with a 3-1 shot to break open the game after they walked Aaron Judge, which is, without question, the most important thing this team has to figure out is how to protect Aaron Judge and make teams pay when they walk him. And he comes through with a bomb and looks like he's getting his timing together. The two of them have stabilized the middle of the lineup. Obviously, Gleyber Torres is hitting a little bit. The offense looks so much better. Oh, well, what happens if Cashman still has the trade deadline? Well, he gets Jazz Chisholm. The guy's got 7 home runs in his first 12 or 13 games with the Yankees. Has been a complete game changer for them. The lineup feels completely different. And still, just enough crap to give you underwhelming performances, to lose 2 out of 3 to the Angels, to blow a game against Texas, to make you feel like you have to hold on for dear life, whether it's Leiter or Weaver or Clay Holmes, who I think gave you one hell of a gritty performance. That's right, I said gritty. 45 pitches from your closer for a 4-out save. He comes in with a runner on second, and Corey Seager up, figures out how to get out of that, and then gets 2 strikeouts, walks a couple guys, gives up a blue hit, but still manages to get out of the inning and keep the save. I'd call that a gritty performance, not a spectacular one that still scares the hell out of me. But a bend and don't break 45-pitch performance from Clay Holmes, and that's what it takes to solidify a game. You're up 8-3. So while you're getting answers, while Stroman was a question mark, comes through with a good start for the Yankees, as Carlos Rodon looked like someone you couldn't trust five starts ago, has been dominant for a month, as Gerrit Cole gave you 10 strikeouts and looking more like Gerrit Cole than we've seen all year, Stanton, Wells, I mean, the list goes on of all the positives that have come up in the Yankees, you know, for the Yankees over the last week and a half or so, still enough negative where, okay, they won this series, but ultimately a nine-game homestand against three lousy opponents, all under 500, to go 5-4, not what you're looking for. Now, they head to Chicago to take on the worst team in baseball, and you're looking for all three. Then you take on the Tigers. This is a road trip where you're expecting to get off to a damn good start. Everyone talked about how the Yankees' schedule gets a hell of a lot easier. And compared to everybody else, the Yankees have this easy schedule. Well, they just had a homestand against three underachieving, under 500 teams, and they're 5-4. And now they head on the road to take on the worst team in baseball, and the Tigers. And it feels like you can't lose a game. They're back to tied with the Orioles, who dropped the game to the Rays yesterday. And it's all right there in front of both teams. 888-808-1019. We'll take your baseball calls. That's where we've been most of this morning. Tommy in Astoria. What's up, Tommy?
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Good. How are you, buddy?
First of all, you're spot on with the turkey. Turkey is overrated. It really is.
Turkey is more than just overrated. Yeah. It's lousy. It's boring. Yeah. I have no need for it. If I never have another piece of turkey in my life, I'll be perfectly satisfied.
You got to go with a nice Virginia ham, a nice baked ham.
Ham is so much more flavorful, and I mean, no doubt. But even just the chicken, I'd rather have a roast chicken. The turkey's too big. It's too big. It never comes out good.
Yeah. The thing is, a couple of things. First of all, with August, notice August is the only month you don't have a holiday.
Right.
You know, so that's why they have to push fall. I'm with you. It's crazy. The pumpkin spice lattes are coming out. They're calling it Oktober. It's insane.
I mean, it's just immediately it's pumpkin spice. It's all off. It's the fall beer. I couldn't believe I saw Sam Adams Oktoberfest as early as I saw it. I was like, what is this?
It's a funny thing. The guy brought up a great point about bullpens. Interesting fact, in 1977, Yankees won a World Series, right? The pitching staff, all year, they used 11 guys the entire year, right?
Yeah.
They threw 52 complete games. And in the playoffs, game four, Billy Martin brought Sparky. They were down 2-1. He brought Sparky Lyle in the fourth inning.
Yeah.
He pitched 5 innings, finished the game, came back the next night and got the save.
Yeah, it's a different world.
It's a different world. If you look at this week in baseball from the 70s, which I've been binge watching, these guys, it looks like these guys are lobbing the ball up there, especially the lefties. These guys, they didn't throw nearly as hard as these guys.
No.
It's a completely different sport. They talked to Reggie a couple years ago, and you know, Reggie's not the most modest guy. Reggie said, I couldn't hit these guys coming out of the bullpen. He said, I had trouble with guys like Seaver and Nolan Ryan because you didn't see them as much.
Right.
I said, in the American League, it was thought of as a breaking ball league. If a guy drew 89-90, it was hard. Reggie said, I couldn't hit these dudes coming out. Every guy throwing 100, lefties, righties.
Yeah. You're 100% right. Now, look, to Reggie's point, though, he wasn't used to it. John Minko in the building. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the great John Minko is here. Look at this guy. You haven't aged a day, Mink. You look fantastic. Look at you. We've missed you, Mink. I've missed you. How are you? Good? Good. I'll talk to you in a few minutes. Look at John Minko, ladies and gentlemen. I'm excited. You guys are in for a treat today. John Minko filling in doing updates. How about that? He's got the same, oh boy, he's taking pictures of the handwritten sign. I'm sure that's going to get sent back to Mike. On the door. But yeah, no, pitching is completely different. But to Reggie's point, he didn't see it a lot. That's why, I mean, you get a little bit used to it. The velocity, when you see it from every pitcher, I'm sure I think Reggie eventually would have caught up. But yeah, if you just take, you know, I always like to use the Bill and Ted phone booth time machine. If you just go take the phone booth time machine, pluck Reggie Jackson out from 1977 and bring him to Yankee Stadium today, yeah, he's striking out. Now, he led the world in strikeouts while he was there, but same thing. Adam Ottavino's 100% correct, okay? Let's just be fair. Adam Ottavino is a terrible reliever. He would strike out Babe Ruth 9 times out of 10. That's a fact. That's why I'm so impressed with what Judge is doing. It is harder now to hit than it's ever been before. That's just a fact. It is harder to hit now than it's ever been before. And all of these guys, you name them, Mickey Mantle, whomever, Lou Gehrig, Mickey Mantle, you know, Harmon Killebrew, whomever. Now, if they were born in this generation, great athletes are great athletes, and if you give them enough time, I suppose they would adjust. But if you just take them straight off the street, you know, in 1956, right, Mickey Mantle's Triple Crown year, you take Triple Crown Mickey Mantle and you bring him to Yankee Stadium today, I'm telling you right now, even Clay Holmes would strike him out. Even Clay Holmes, who doesn't miss bats, would strike him out. Dennis in Baltimore. What's up, Dennis?
How you doing, Chris?
What's going
Thanks
on, buddy?
Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Not much. I'm a Long Island guy. I live in Baltimore now. I'm actually making the drive up the Jersey Turnpike to go to a golf tournament today in Long Island. So
nice.
Thank you for keeping me entertained today.
You got it.
Listen, I know you're coming down to Baltimore. I just wanted to make a couple of points to you. I know your partner there but on the other side of the glass told you about Pickles Pub.
He did.
Make sure you grab a crab cake while you're here because they love their damn crabs down here.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
And then also Boog's Pal. Has a Boog's Barbecue out in the outfield. They're amazing. Listen, it's one of the original nice stadiums, and it still holds up.
Yeah.
You're going to really enjoy it. Your boys are going to enjoy it. You got all the statues out there between the stadium and Pickles Pub. So just you'll really have a good time.
Yeah, no.
Hey, the other thing I was going to tell
you. Good. No, I was just saying I'm looking forward to it. You're right. Good.
Without a doubt. Listen, I was in retail for 20 years, moved around the country. Listen, the point is, these stores, they're not selling barbecues and fans in August because everybody already bought all that crap.
Right, no, I get it.
They got to bring out the fall stuff. That's the space they have. Don't worry about it. It doesn't get any earlier. It just feels like
it. No, it's definitely earlier. And, yeah, no, I understand going to Lowe's and not selling lawnmowers anymore. I get that. If you don't have a lawnmower by now, you're probably not in the market for one. I understand that aspect of it. But beer? It's still summer beer drinking time. It's not fall beer drinking time. You don't have to throw out the fall beer. You don't have to give me, you know, Halloween candy.
You used to have the clearance stuff, so you'd have the summer clearance stuff out.
Right, or whatever. Yeah, I mean, I get it. Okay, so even decorations I would understand, as opposed to, I don't know, whatever, you know, picnic stuff or backyard barbecue stuff. I get that. But the stuff I plan to buy and consume, I'm not anything. I'm buying Oktoberfest and storing it until week one of the NFL season. I'm not. Sorry. Inexcusable. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. Taking your phone calls for the next 40 minutes until the warm-up show. Right here on The Fan.
Start some trouble and call The Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 4:30. McMonagle here with you. You heard the Olympic report. There, and I guess the Olympics are now officially over. They have the closing ceremonies. Congratulations to all the Olympians out there. I guess the United States won the most medals. And I didn't talk much about it. I got to be honest. Now, I didn't get too much into the basketball. I just didn't. I know a lot of people did, and I'm not trying to poo-poo it. If you liked it, great. I understand. It's definitely different than in 92. I know this team has been deemed unlikable at times. I know Kevin Garnett is going after people on Twitter or whatever. I know it's much more difficult than it was back then. They've won five consecutive. I get it. But here's the one thing that I just don't understand. Because there are legitimate people whose opinion I respect and I think are good sports fans, and talking about Curry's performance in the gold medal game and the shots he made as one of like the crowning achievements of his career. I'm sorry. That I don't get. Like, this is a guy who literally changed the sport of basketball in many ways. More than many. I mean, you're talking about a handful of men in the history of the sport who have had an impact on it the way Steph Curry has. He's had multiple championships. He's had enormous game-winning shots. He's one of, if not the face of the NBA in many ways, and he's been incredible. And while I understand that winning a gold medal is an accomplishment that everyone would love to do, and that team can't lose, I understand that. If you lose, it's a disaster, and you have to win that game. And they had a close scare in the semifinal, and then playing France in the final, at times it was a game, and Curry put it away with his unbelievable shots, and he hit a couple of unbelievable shots, no doubt. He had a great moment there the last couple of minutes of the game, hitting incredible shot after incredible shot. He didn't miss. But one of the crowning achievements of his career to hit those shots? I understand what a gold medal means. I get it. It's not insignificant, not saying that. But I've heard a lot of people talk about how it's one of their favorite moments of Steph Curry's career. That one, I don't get. I've heard a lot of people say that. I don't understand it. I'm curious to hear how Steph feels about it. And if he does, who am I to tell him it's not one of his best crowning moments of his career? But for me, I mean, he's on the greatest collection of basketball talent possibly in the history of mankind. And they won a tournament they absolutely had to win. And he hit some shots, no doubt. But I had a tough time hearing a lot of people say it's like one of the best moments of his career. I wouldn't say it was. But now my wife can stop bothering me and complaining that she didn't get to watch the Olympics. At least that's over. Because I own the TV, and I didn't watch the Olympics that much. I got to admit, I didn't find. I know a lot of people were. I think me and Fliegelman were talking about this the other day. I think like there was like a more juice for this Olympics than I remember in the last couple. I felt like a lot of people were into this Olympic this year, and obviously next year in LA, I'm sure we're all gonna. Tom Cruise was, you know, parachuting in with the American flag. We're gonna go nuts in Los Angeles in 4 years. I'm sure people there'll be juice for it then, but. I don't know. I have a tough time getting into the Olympics. I don't know why.
Last one was COVID, so people were...
Right, definitely because of the COVID. And I went... Like, if it's on and I'm watching it, I get into it a little bit, and I'm rooting for the American team, no doubt. And I understand, you know, Kevin Durant's issues with people who would rather root for their, you know, NBA fandom playing for another country as opposed to the United States. Like, I guess, but that's like... That's to my point of Steph Curry's big moment. Like, you got people in this country rooting for Joker because they're Denver Nuggets fans. It's like, and this is Steph Curry's crowning achievement, winning this gold medal? I don't know. Had a tough time with that one. 888-808-1019. Danny in Belrose. What's up, Danny?
Hey, good morning, Chris. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. I had a decent weekend. So yeah, like the game yesterday against Texas, thank God the pitching was good and the bats were good. That bullpen was terrible. I mean, oh, my
yeah.
God.
No, I mean, the bullpen. I mean, Leiter was really the two guys who really had terrible weekends were Leiter and Weaver. Weaver was awful when he came in replacing Cole. And, you know, to give up two home runs for Leiter, who I believe it was either, I can't remember. I know I saw the stat. I should have double-checked. It's either 45 innings or 45 appearances or something. He's only given up three home runs in 45 innings, I think it's innings, and he gives up two in this. He gives up two in this one inning. He was just atrocious.
And Canely gave up two runs too. He didn't look good.
Yeah, no, I know, but Canely also, there was some defensive issues there too. I mean, I don't know. For the first time we saw Jazz Chisholm really his. You know, there was no reason to cut in front and make that play. We saw a couple times in the series. One, now he it was two home runs. He said Leiter has given up two home runs in his last 42 innings, and he gave up two in this game in one inning. But you know, Jazz, I'm going to give him a break on the play on Saturday where he said he thought Soto caught the ball, and he didn't have his foot on the base when it was clearly a force play, and he went for the tag. But this play, I mean, he just cuts in front of Volpe for no reason. The ball goes off his glove, costs them a run. Gleyber Torres damn near boots the easiest ground ball you've ever seen in your life at the end of the game. Like, the infield defense is a little bit of an issue, especially with Clay Holmes. I mean, that's the, I think, the biggest argument for me with Clay Holmes, because I'll argue that he gets beat with soft contact a lot, even when he has good stuff. The best argument is it's tough to have a soft contact ground ball pitcher when right now I don't, the third baseman's never played third base before, and the second baseman looks like he's afraid of the big moment. So that I agree with.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with Gleyber in his defense. I mean, I don't know.
No, I mean, Danny, I'm not kidding you. I've never seen anything like that. I've never seen anything like Gleyber Torres handling that last final ground ball. I don't know if I've ever seen, and I mean, you're talking about arguably the easiest ground ball Gleyber Torres will ever field in his life. And he ran up to it, backhanded it, and stumbled. I've never seen it. I've seen that ground ball a million times. The second baseman goes up to it. He crouches down. He puts his glove between his legs. The ball goes into his glove. He stands up. He throws it to first base. It is the easiest play you'll ever see. And Gleyber Torres runs up to it, backhands it for I have no freaking idea why, and then stumbles before throwing it. I almost lost it. And I got to tell you, everybody who says Gleyber Torres is going to kill them in a big spot in the playoffs, I've never been on that train. I mean, he's without question prone to the mistake. But I've never just been like, oh, yeah, well, it's definitely coming in the playoffs. That's just a bunch of, you know, pessimistic crap. For the first time, I'm starting to be convinced of it, because Gleyber Torres just absolutely allowed the pressure of that moment to turn him into someone who didn't know how to field a ground ball. I mean, it would have been one thing if he just booted it. Like in the famous game in Baltimore where Volpe booted the ground ball. All right, you just boot it. Maybe the moment was had a role to play in it. Maybe you just booted a ground ball. He ran up to it and backhanded a ball right in front of him. And then damn near fell down. I've never seen anything like that in my life. Jim in Hackettstown. What's up, Jim?
Yeah, a couple things, Chris.
Yeah.
So Aaron Boone, I can't understand. First of all, when it comes to Torres and LeMahieu,
yeah.
I mean, okay, I know LeMahieu had a couple of good days, but the guy's shot. I'm sorry. I mean, I understand you're going to put him at third and first as a, you know, when a guy needs a rest. But, I mean, give Cabrera a chance. I mean, he's not doing half bad considering he's a bat. I mean, I don't like him as a switch hitter. Put him up lefty and that's
yeah. Cabrera has done well. I can't argue it. If you look at his numbers, I was listening to a little bit of Talking Yanks, and they were talking about this. If you look at his numbers when he starts and you look at his numbers when he comes off the bench, he's hitting about 70 points higher. He's hitting 300, and his OPS is 1,000. I think the Yankees love him as someone who can actually come off the bench and be successful. It's a difficult thing to do, and he's proven to be very good at it this year. So I think they like him possibly coming off the bench. And honestly, I mean, I took multiple calls yesterday saying, how the hell did Aaron Boone not play DJ LeMahieu after he had six RBIs? I mean, we can't have it both ways. Like, the guy has finally started to swing. He hit one off the wall in this game. He got thrown out trying to turn it into a double. But you can't argue. DJ LeMahieu's at-bats have been far better in the last week. It's just he won a game single-handedly in Philadelphia and then came through with the game-winning hit the other day in a walk-off. Like, he's been better. I mean, against the lefty, I have no problem with him playing first base over a young Ben Rice.
Okay, so let's go to Clay Holmes.
Yeah.
So how many times have you seen Aaron Boone, oh, we can't pitch him because, you know, he's thrown 13 pitches, you know, and closed the game out. And then today, he throws like 45 pitches. It makes no sense.
Well, he had no choice.
Come on, man. You knew. You're going to tell me watching that game, you didn't think, oh, he's going to blow this game?
I did think that, but he didn't. And I think is more important than what happened. What you think is more important than what happened. Here's the point. He brought him in the eighth inning because Leiter blew it. He had no choice, but Weaver was not going to pitch. He had no choice but to bring in Clay Holmes in the eighth, which, by the way, against their best hitter, two-time World Series MVP, Seager, he comes through, Corey Seager comes through with a, getting out of the jam with a runner on second base. Then he gets two strikeouts, and he starts walking guys. No doubt, he walked two guys. They had a 12-pitch at bat for one of the walks. He gives up a blue pit, 45 pitches. What are you going to do, bring in Hill, the lefty?
Like, well, he's blown five of the last, I think, 11
yeah,
games.
I understand that. He didn't blow this one. Like, and some of them, one of them, the outfielders fell down. Verdugo fell down in one of those blown saves. Like, Clay Holmes is still one of their best relievers. Like it or not, they don't have a better option. Clay Holmes is their closer. And he's better than you're giving him credit for. I know the blown saves. I know. I thought this was a gutsy performance from Clay Holmes. He threw 45 pitches. He got a four-out save, almost blew it, but made the pitches when he had to, and he threw 45 pitches. He bent but didn't broke. I thought that was a positive. I feel better about his mentality as a closer making his way through that. Now, he scares the hell out of me. I'm not trying to tell you he's a brilliant closer who comes in and shuts everybody down. He makes you nervous when he's in there. No doubt. I can think of two or three blown saves that honestly aren't his fault. One in particular. I thought Clay Holmes battled yesterday. I mean, I don't understand. Like, when a starting pitcher has nothing, which I don't think Clay Holmes had nothing. I thought he had decent stuff. But when a starting pitcher battles through four or five innings and gives up two or three runs, we go, oh, that was a gutty performance, made it through. But Clay Holmes can't have a gutty performance. He threw 45 pitches. When's the last time a reliever threw? It's the first time he's thrown in a Yankee uniform that many pitches. He was asked to do a lot and came through and got a save. And they won the game. I thought that was a gutty performance from Clay Holmes. Especially, he's up, the Yankees are up 8-3 in the eighth inning. Now, I'm not saying he shouldn't be ready at any moment to come in the game, but let's be honest, he's probably not thinking he's coming in the game. Leiter's in there with a 5-run lead, and Leiter gets hit around. He's got to come up and get the last out of the eighth inning, and then come back out there. He walked two guys, one on a battle of an at-bat, and then gave up a blue pit on a jam shot, and then got the final out on 45 pitches. I was much more upset with Gleyber Torres possibly blowing that game. And that would have been said, like, if Gleyber Torres does what he does, falls down and throws that ball away, we'd say, nope, another blown save for Clay Holmes. Howard, real quick before the break. What's up, Howard?
Yeah, hi. I was listening to a Beatles music show on Saturday morning, and they were talking about Beatles covers.
Yeah.
So the song was I Saw Her Standing There, and I was surprised, and the group pulled it off, but Grateful Dead did a version of it.
The Grateful Dead, thank you for the call, Howard. The Grateful Dead did a version of I Saw Her Standing There. I've never heard it. There's a lot of Beatles covers. I'm trying to think of some of my favorites. Aerosmith does Come Together. Oh, you know what? Easy. Because I was a huge Boyz II Men fan when I was a kid. On their second album, Boyz II Men 2, they do a cover of Yesterday. Love it. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. One more segment. Phone calls, rapid fire style, and then the warm-up show will come your way. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you in the overnights right here on The Fan.
Chargers and the New York Giants have exchanged their draft picks.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Eli Manning and Philip Rivers.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 4:51, McMonagle here with you. We're going to try and get through as many calls as we can as we have the last few minutes before the warm-up show, which I'm told will include John Minka. So prepare yourself, because the man never stops talking. I was just out there in the newsroom with him. You should hear him. I asked him one simple question. He just kept going on and on and on. I was like, hey, Mink, how's it going? He gave me his whole life story. It was wonderful. I missed the man. It was so nice to hear from him and speak to him, get a chance to see what's going on in his life. So forthcoming. I can't wait to hear how the morning the warm up show goes, and then plus updates in the morning show. Oh my God, what a day! Who knew? I mean, they tell us about the Javits Center enough. You thought maybe we'd get a Minko update. Dan in Lafayette, what's up, Dan?
Yo, President C-Man.
What's up, Danny?
What's up, man? I like the sound of that. If, on your first day, you better ban intentional walks.
Of what, of being, man, president?
If you become president.
Yeah. I'm much more focused on banning turkey than I am banning intentional walks.
That's on day two.
Okay.
Because I agree with you there. Ham all the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm upset, man. I really thought Judge was going to hit that 45 home runs at that, you know, during that 9-game home stretch, but they just walk them too much now, you know? That seems to be the go-to. They gotta challenge it, man.
Well, I mean, there's nothing. I mean, listen, Dan, and thank you for the call, rapid-fire style. I don't know if there's nothing you could do. There's no rule. What are you going to, you're going to legislate balls? Because they'll just won't walk them. They'll pitch around them. You're going to legislate what the pitcher was trying to do. There is a penalty for four balls. It's called a walk. He gets first base. Well, I don't understand what we think we're going to accomplish. It's up to the Yankees. And thankfully, it seems like they have it answered a little bit with Wells and Stanton. It's up to the Yankees to protect him. And whether that means switching the lineup and putting Soto behind him or having Stanton and Wells become legitimate threats, you walk him, boom, 3-run home run. But, I mean, right now he's on a singles kick. It's almost like he wants to win the triple crown. He's just like, I'm going to hit some singles. I'm going to focus on just getting some base hits so I can hit 325, 330. I mean, he's incredible. I mean, it really is. Boone talked about it a little bit. They asked him in the post game, like, he's at 299 home runs. He's going to be the youngest man ever to get, well, I shouldn't say youngest, that's incorrect. The least amount of games ever to 300 home runs. He's going to beat Ralph Kiner's record of fewest games to 300 home runs. He's an absolute beast. He's an absolute beast. He is an incredible hitter. It's a pleasure to watch him. And I know this is blasphemy, and I don't want to upset Yankee fans, but just take a second, because even if they don't win the World Series, okay? And I want them to, and I think they can. Even if they don't, just take a second. We are watching greatness. I'm not saying that's good enough. I'm just saying. It's incredible to be a Yankee fan and watch Aaron Judge play. The Yankees get to watch the best hitter in the world, who was drafted by them, developed by them. Let me just stop there. I don't want to get too much into Brian Cashman. This is about Aaron Judge. I'm not trying to defend Brian Cashman, but he drafted him and developed him. And, you know, yeah, he's the only one, right? I understand that. But he's like, you know, the greatest, like, in the whole league. And possibly, like, of this entire generation. But, you know, watching him is a pleasure. Richie in Queens. What's up, Richie?
He's up there. I mean, I'm being a Bonds guy. You know, I'm a Giants
fan. Yeah,
no,
I know.
Bonds was the best hitter.
You know, I agree. I still think 01 to 04 Bonds is untouchable, but he's pretty close.
Yeah, and this guy is just a face. I love him. I met him when he was a rookie when he came down to the New York Stock Exchange. I spent 20 minutes with him.
Oh, well, nice.
He's a class act. I got some great pictures with him, and I wish him all the best. He's the face of baseball right now. And Ohtani, but now he's an all-around player versus DH. But real quick with the Yankees,
yeah.
Obviously, you know, the pitching's gotten a little better. They should win that division. Baltimore, I'm just not impressed with their pitching at all.
Yeah.
At least
and now, Grace, they're hoping Rodriguez can come back in September. Grayson Rodriguez just went out. Craig Kimbrell came in and gave up runs today. Like, they have no back end of the bullpen, really. And their lineup has been hit or miss, and they've played terrible baseball, dropping pop-ups, making mistakes on the in the field, on the base path. They're playing as sloppy as the Yankees were, so...
Yeah, and the Yankees thing, obviously the back end. Holmes is an enigma. I don't know why he's not better. He's got great stuff.
Yep.
C-Mac, I'm not impressed with Leiter. I know a swing and miss, but when they make contact, he's got a 4 ERA for a reason. So, you know, Weaver's been really good. They're going to turn around. And real quick at the Mets, and I spoke to you last week, there's no way that the Mets go into a series and say, oh, they're going to dominate, like whether it's Oakland, whatever it is. No. If you don't have the starting pitching, and right now they've taken a step back. Mania's been great, but the back of his card says he's not that
good. No, I understand, Richie, and I'm sorry to cut you off. I'm trying to get through as many before the show ends. But, yes, I agree. the idea that they should sweep this homestand up until Baltimore, obviously, but it's not easy, and they've played poorly against Miami. Chris in San Diego, what's up, Chris?
Morning. I want to get your take and opinion on what they're going to do with Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm sorry, I'm only going to get you one point because I got a minute. I want to get a couple calls in. Anthony Rizzo, I honestly don't have any idea. Ben Rice has cooled off enough and hasn't really shown much here. I know he's not playing against lefties. He's not playing every day. LeMahieu's been playing. I would think Rizzo's going to get a look. I think Ben Rice probably gets sent down, and it's Rizzo and LeMahieu. And if that doesn't work, they'll recall Ben Rice. I would think that's it. Ben Rice has not hit enough to guarantee his roster spot. Just hasn't. Mario in Long Beach. What's up, Mario?
Oh, good, good. I'm glad I got you in. I want to give a bigger, quicker opinion why it's so important for Steph Curry to win that Olympics. It's similar to Djokovic in tennis. They're both great players. They have everything in the world. That's the only thing they didn't have, and they're old enough to know they're
Steph
not
play on other. Did Steph not play on other Olympic teams? This was Steph's first Olympics?
I think, am I wrong? It wasn't?
I mean, listen, they've won five in a row. Steph's been around for a while. I'd have been surprised if he didn't play a couple years ago, but maybe he didn't. I don't know. But the idea that it's not so much winning the gold medal, it's hitting those shots when he did that people are considering it. This was his first. Okay, so it's his first gold medal. I'll give you that. And he sealed the deal, and he hit incredible shots, but I don't know if I could call that like his one of his crowning achievements. It's a great moment. And I'm not belittling gold medals, God knows, but, I mean, he happens to be an NBA player who's won championships. All right, real quick, Mitchell and Fort Lee, you got 2 seconds.
Big Mac, one thing you say, I'll call you tomorrow, but remember one thing, Schmidt will be back in about another week and a half.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be. They're talking about him making rehab starts in a week and a half. He's going to be back, hopefully, early September. That's it for me. Thank you guys for calling. Thank you for listening. Rami on the other side. Thank you, sir. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your Monday. John Minko will grace your presence at some point in your morning if you decide to stick with the fan. How about that? That's as good as it gets. Love the Mink, man. The warm-up show is next. Yankees head to Chicago. The Mets are off for a day. Come home for Tuesday. I'll talk to you at 2 o'clock tomorrow morning. I'll see you later. I'm out of here. Bye-bye. Sports Radio 101.9 FM.